Muhammad had not implied that the three daughters of God were on the same level as Allah. They were simply intermediaries, like the angels, whose intercession is approved in the same surah. Jews and Christians have always found such mediators compatible with their monotheism. The new verses seemed a truly propitious gesture, and their effect on the Quraysh was electrifying. As soon as Muhammad had finished his recitation, he prostrated himself in prayer. And, to his astonishment, the Quraishan elders knelt down beside him, humbly pressing their foreheads to the ground. The news spread like wildfire through the city. Muhammad has spoken of our gods in splendid fashion. He alleged in what he recited that they are the exalted Garanik, the heavenly birds whose intercession is approved. The crisis was over. The elders told Muhammad, "We know that Allah kills and gives life, creates and preserves. But these, our goddesses, pray to him for us. And since you have now permitted them to share divine honours with Allah, we therefore desire to unite with you." But Muhammad was troubled. This was too easy. Were the Quraysh really going to amend their behaviour, share their wealth with the poor, and be content to become the humble slaves of God? It did not seem likely. He was also disturbed by the jubilant words of the elders. He had certainly not meant to imply that the goddesses shared divine honours with Allah. While everybody else was celebrating, Muhammad went home, shut himself away, and meditated. That night, Gabriel, the spirit of revelation, came to him. "What have you done, Muhammad?" he asked. "You have recited to those people something I did not bring you from God, and have said what he did not say to you." Muhammad's wish for a compromise had distorted the divine message. He was immediately contrite, but God consoled him with a new revelation. All the previous prophets had made similar satanic mistakes. It was always a struggle to make sense of the revelations, and all too easy to confuse the deeper current of inspiration with a more superficial idea of one's own. But, the revelation continued, God renders null and void whatever aspersion the shaitan might cast, and God makes his messages clear in and by themselves. An important principle had been established. God could alter his scriptures at the time that they were being revealed to a particular prophet. Revelation was progressive. We might say that Muhammad sometimes saw fresh implications in his message that qualified some of his earlier insights. Now Muhammad had to go back to the Quraysh with a new verse that amended the satanic ones. Once again God asked, "Have you then ever considered what you are worshipping in Alat and Al-Uzza, as well as in Manat?" But this time his answer was scathing. Why did they attribute daughters to Allah when they themselves preferred sons? These so-called goddesses were simply empty names, human projections fabricated by the Quraysh and their forefathers. Those who worship them follow nothing but surmise and their own wishful thinking. This was a slap in the face that not only eliminated the goddesses, but insulted the revered ancestors. Why did the Quran find it impossible to accommodate these three goddesses alongside the angels? Why ruin the chance of peace with this uncompromising rejection of an apparently harmless devotion?